Hey, this is comedian Mark Maron, and I love Mr. Media Radio, even though he didn't let me go on as long as some other guests.
The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to documentary filmmakers Vishal Solanki and Han Nguyen. Their new production is Caffeinated, the international story behind your morning cup of joe. Stick around, and pinkies out, if you please. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you today by Amazon.com. When you visit MrMedia.com and click on any of the links to purchase books, music, movies, gift certificates, or anything else through our Amazon link, you support this free video podcast. Whenever you need something else from Amazon, please consider returning to MrMedia.com to order it. It doesn't cost you any extra, and we sure appreciate the support. And don't forget, MrMedia.com has more than 1,200 celebrity audio and video interviews archived on the site. That's hundreds upon hundreds of hours free entertainment. Subscribe for free on MrMedia.com, and you'll instantly get an email every time a new interview is posted. You can also watch and subscribe to the show on YouTube, Vimeo, Daily Motion, The Realm Network, and Frequency.com. And if you prefer to just listen, Mr. Media is also available for free on iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Blueberry, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, Podfeed.net, and Player FM. You can subscribe to any of those services and never miss another episode. Finally, you can interact with Mr. Media interviews on all kinds of social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and more. Friend or follow us, we'll friend or follow you back. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of jazzed-up morning drinkers who can't start their day without 95 milligrams of caffeine, times three, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. So, I don't think I've ever seen my mother without a cup of coffee in her right hand to start the day. As far back as I can recall, it seemed like the first thing she did every day was start a pot of coffee. I still remember the tins of Chock Full of Nuts everywhere when I was a kid, but never Sanka, oh no, never Sanka, even when it was trendy. Never anything that wasn't the real McCoy, Mom told me when I called her last night. Now, the Starbucks explosion came too late for my mom. She had already retired by the time there was a barista on every corner. Now, she said, I love my Keurig. It's tasty, it's quick, there's no cleanup but your cup. And my very favorite, and no, I didn't ask her, but she told me anyway, my very favorite is Folgers Colombian, medium to dark brews. But I don't like Starbucks, even their mildest one. I just don't like it. Dunkin' Donuts, I like their coffee in the store, but I don't like their pods. I'm not really sure why. That was Mom, by the way. I had my mom in mind when I agreed to preview a new documentary film by Vishal Solanki and Han Nguyen called Caffeinated. It follows coffee beans from the ground to your individual cup and takes Java drinkers behind the scenes with the growers, buyers, the processors, and coffee shop proprietors of the world. Vishal Solanki and Han Nguyen, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Welcome. So I assume you're both coffee drinkers?
Yes, very much so.
And Han, how do you like your coffee? How do you...
When I'm out and about, I usually have a latte or a cappuccino, just because I can't get that at home. But at home, it depends on the season, whichever coffee is in season, then I'll just brew that at home, either on a Chemex or like an AeroPress.
All right. And Vishal, same question.
Yeah, I like Ethiopia and Costa Rica more than the others. I am also taking a liking to Guatemala now, but those two are my favorites. And at home, I use a V60 or a drip machine. And then if I'm outside, I'll get espresso-based drinks.
And Vishal, how much coffee do you drink in a day?
At least 2 cups. I mean, I need my first cup almost immediately in the first 10 minutes after waking up. And then the second one is more improvised.
Like my mom. And Han, what about you? How much do you drink in a day?
I try and keep it down to 2 cups. But I like my coffee all day. So usually the second cup lasts all day.
And Michelle, what is it about coffee that intrigued you enough to do a globetrotting documentary about it?
Well, it was an idea for both of us because we both were actually really... I think we knew how much we did not know about it, which was actually the incentive here, that you know, everything came across as something new and surprising and fascinating. So it was just, you know, there was this boom happening in Los Angeles and we got exposed to it. And once we took the first step towards making the movie, then it was just like, it was just, you know, pulling us towards it. The attraction value just increased exponentially and we went deeper and deeper. But we did not know the specific reasons back then as to what was attracting us. It's like it's something you can't really put in words. It is just a certain kind of love for it. And then it became more of a fascination with all its nuances.
And Han, did doing this documentary, did it change your... your view of coffee? Did it change your taste in coffee?
Yes, definitely. For research, I had worked as a barista for 3 months at a coffee bar in downtown LA. And through that, I was exposed to specialty coffee, which I didn't know at the time was special. So during the training, they trained me how to properly taste coffee, how to brew coffee, and then it just kind of became it's kind of this love for it. And I think that moment when I knew it was tasting like an Ethiopian coffee, which tasted so different from anything I had before. And I think that moment drew me in.
Well, that's one of the charms of the film, I think, is when there's a lot of interviews with a lot of different people, and they kind of talk about how different things are. There is, maybe you would agree, there was a quote I wrote down. There was a woman in Caffeinated who says, "A tiny bean that comes from a fruit can humble an individual." I guess you would agree with that.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, that and to finish it, that bean needs a lot of respect. Yeah, that's, I think it's become an iconic sentence from the movie. And I mean, just to extrapolate very briefly on it, I think she says it really well, but it's just the idea of like we've never wondered as to what makes us use something or consume something again and again and again, and we are never tired of it. And I think that's the quality which coffee has, is that, you know, every morning there is something inspiring in terms of taste or how it wakes you up. And it's been we've never contemplated or reflected on it. And now that we see the movie, it does give us a chance to, reflect on it as to how many years of our life really we've been consuming it. And now it's time to, respect it the same way.
Han, were you surprised, as I was, by how many hands and, for that matter, feet actually touch each coffee bean in the process?
Yeah, I had no idea. I didn't really think too much about what I eat or what I consume daily before making this film. So I think this film itself has opened up a lot for me in terms of just knowing where your food comes from and how to appreciate the things around you.
We're so used to food, the idea that food is processed and it's everything is automated. But when you watch this film, I mean, one of the first things that struck me was that the beans are hand-picked And some are picked or some are not. Some are ready and some are not. And then the all along the process, they're dried. They go through different processes to add taste and flavor. It was kind of astonishing how many touches. You know, I know when I coach soccer, we talk about, you know, you want the girls. I coach girls soccer. You wanted them to have so many touches on the ball. Well, there are a lot of touches on each coffee bean. It was kind of amazing.
Mm-hmm.
What was the hardest part of your journey as filmmakers? And I mean, I'm going to guess that it was the travel to some very remote villages, but maybe that's not it. Michelle?
Well, I would say pretty much there were two constraints primarily which most filmmakers have. One is, of course, it's a documentary, so it's a journey where you don't really know the destination till you've traveled enough. And that's where the length, it took like over 4 years, 4.5 years to finish the movie. So it was excruciating in that sense. But I think we made a wise decision by prolonging it and really focusing on the details. And the second thing was obviously it's self-funded by both of us and some other friends. So had it been, you know, like a production where there's a set amount, maybe things would have been less painful. But at the same time, I think it's an ideal first movie, like a debutante movie, and we learned a lot of great lessons from everything that we did not have, and we had to pull a lot of resources from friends and family in terms of technicians, crew, translators. So we made some really good relationships out of those constraints, and those were pretty much the two big constraints, which was, one was money, and second was like, what is the story we want to really talk about?
Yeah, and I want to add during the editing process was one of the hardest, because we've shot so much footage and we've met so many people that and their stories, we grew some sort of attached to them, and so in the editing room, it was a hard decision to kind of cut people out.
Editing is always the hardest. I make my living writing books and articles, for that matter, mostly books, and it is so difficult after 6 months or a year of interviewing people and gathering material to have to get down to the point where you have to start cutting people out and cutting out things. And, you know, that quote I had from the woman about, how tiny bean. I mean, that was a great quote, but imagine if you had just decided to leave that out and you went with something else, and you'd be kicking yourself now because you'd be going, oh, you know what, we should have had that in. That would have been great.
Yeah.
So what is the division of labor between the two of you? Who does what?
Michelle, go ahead.
We both produced it and directed it together. When we were on location, how it would work was that we both would research a certain coffee person or a typical topography together at home on a laptop, and make a questionnaire which we need to ask them. So then if needed, we would translate to Spanish if you're going to Guatemala or Nicaragua or something. So initially it was all like, okay, this is the floor plan, and we both were going to co-produce and co-direct together. And in terms of the technical aspects, I have, I've been a cinematographer pretty much. And so I did the cinematography on it while Han would do the sound while we were on location, because it was just a two-person crew. And then coming back from location, she would sync up everything, sound and everything, and then, do a first pass. And then we would again meet at my place, or I would go to her place, and then we would, find chunks of interviews which we like and make notes and stuff. So that was our first pass of editing. Of course, we did have a lot of other editors help in syncing sound and stuff. And then once we both did that, there were other editors also who had, you know, because after 4 years, it was difficult to know, like, some content which we liked or disliked, or if it's still feeling fresh, because the movie was over 2 hours long at that point, and we knew we had to cut it down. But, you know, at a certain point, we were not sure of what is still valid after 4.5 years. So we had a couple of other editors also look at it outside and trim it shorter. And then we had an editor from Mexico, Ramon, who's got a very extensive documentary experience. He just worked with the beginning and end of the film and, you know, worked with the rhythm and pacing. So that was pretty much, you know, what our labor was. But then at the same time, I think the advantage is also, like, if I like a certain thing and if Han likes a certain thing, it's always good to have 4 eyes looking at it rather than 2, especially for documentaries, because, you know, that's the only way you know, there is more than just a singular vision. I mean, I do get it that in narrative, a singular vision is really important. But I think for this specific project and its cultural width, having 2 directors was something which was very beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. If you had a disagreement about something, how would you settle it? If one of you liked something and the other didn't, or vice versa, how would you work that out?
Over coffee.
That's a great answer. What a great answer. Was that practiced? Have you said that before?
No, but it's true. I mean, we would meet at like midnight after work, you know, at a cafe, and then work things out and plan things as we go, because we couldn't afford to not have our day jobs. And so I think a lot of times it's just we kind of knew what we wanted to do, and we had a similar goal, and so and we both are very hard workers, so it was an easy process.
And just to add to it, Bob, what we did was we did a lot of test screenings, you know. So we would call in people whose judgment we trusted. Some of them were students of mine from Santa Monica College. Some of them were Han's friends, roommates, my roommates. So we called people in the business, and we did a lot of testing with what it is that people are disliking for the most part. And if something in that analysis was recurring, that means it was, no matter how attached we were to it, it was not playing an important role in the film, and we just axed it out.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a couple more questions here. People say that if you like McDonald's food, that you should never go in the back and see how it is made. And I wondered if you're both laughing. Was there any loss of innocence for either of you seeing how coffee beans are processed?
No, there's more of a like a love for it now that I know where it comes from and how, you know, the process of from farm to cup. There's so much process and so many hands have touched it that it's really inspiring to see that process. And I'm, you know, I'm more inspired to now go out and find out more, you know, more of these kind of stories.
And Bob, I think I get the angle which you're talking about, but that would be more appropriate in commodity coffee, you know, where it's generally picked by the machines in Brazil on a much larger farm, and. I think for me, the loss of innocence was more the realization of the fact. I know we both were in Guatemala, and there is a point in the movie where you see like really commodity grade coffee, which is like, you know, it looks like something you wouldn't eat. It's pretty much leftovers of all the good coffee and whatever did not pass the quality analysis. So that's something which is a concern as to most coffee drinking countries do not really, they cannot afford drinking their own coffee because they have to use it to export it to US or Europe. And hopefully that can change. in the next few years.
That was fascinating in the film. I think we get to that kind of later in the film, that if you want a good cup of coffee, don't go to Guatemala. I mean,
yeah.
They ship, and you know what? I live in Florida, and we've experienced that here, where if you want a good orange, you have to buy a California orange because they ship all the good Florida oranges elsewhere. Same thing with Florida strawberries, which are very good, but unless you go to the farm and get it there, chances are you're going to be getting strawberries from somewhere else. It's a very peculiar thing about the world economy.
It's weird, yeah.
Now, just out of curiosity, in the last few months, we've seen Cuba opening up, and of course, there's always, you know, you can get a cup of Cuban coffee. Speaking of caffeinated, I just wondered if it's a very specific question. If either of you think that the opening up of Cuba will have any impact on changing American coffee tastes?
Well, I mean, right now, if you are in Florida, you may have heard of it. They drink Café Bustelo, mm-hmm. which is a Cuban coffee. Personally, see, the movie is targeted to specialty coffee, which is of the most supreme quality, which is grown and harvested and roasted in a very specific structural way. It's almost formulaic, the whole process. So if at all this would be happening, you know, first of all, I think there'll be some kind of a transitionary phase where people are really... I know of people personally who live in Miami and they import coffees from Cuba, but considering so many countries which are growing coffee and people, green bean buyers who have already established relationships in those countries, you know, over the last few years, we are looking at maybe the newer generation of coffee buyers who may want to tap into the Cuban coffee scene. And especially on the East Coast, where they do have a big, you know, Latino and Cuban population, like a migration from there. So that's something which could happen. But at the same time, I think it's going to be a very slow and organic phase. And it also, in the end, depends how, you know, the local governments in Cuba are pushing it. Because a lot of this is driven by the entire economic structure of the country. Like, for example, countries like Honduras, Guatemala, or Kenya, those are pushing their coffee farmers and growers a lot. So it all depends on how Cuba is, you know, ripe for specialty coffee, which as of now we don't know yet. But it could be something 5 years from now that could develop into something lucrative for Cuba.
And Han, what are some of the issues that are facing growers in the future? I mean, you guys talk about this a little bit in the film. One of the things that I think stood out for me was the idea that young people are seeing other opportunities and they may not want to stay on the farm. Kind of like Luke Skywalker in the first Star Wars movie. You know, it's like, I don't want to stay here on your farm. I want to go out there and I want to race, you know. I don't know what I'm talking about. Go ahead and answer the question.
I think, in that sense, it's, you know, it's a collaborative effort. You know, with Cuba opening up, there's a greater chance for roasters and coffee shops to have more access to good coffee, because I mean, there's issues of like you know, like certain climate change and rust in coffees and things like that, where the productions has gone down. And so I think with the opening of Cuba, you know, it just opens more doors. And in terms of young farmers wanting to venture out, I think it's not happening to cacao as well. It's the same story where, you know, if you can't make enough to survive, you have to find other options. And so I think it's a collaborative effort to try and make, you know, bring, how do I say it? bring more wealth or more distributed wealth into, you know, like every part of the chain, especially the farmers.
And last question, what's next for the two of you? Will you work on separate films? Will you do something together again?
Well, we are asking the same question every day to ourselves. I mean, right now it's too soon to say, I would say, because we are still trying to, you know, get this movie out. The goal is to have as wider a distribution as we can, because right now all the focus is on North America and parts of Europe. But considering it's such a big story, we want to really see how it can reach every corner of the world and, you know, through subtitles and whatnot. Besides that, you know, I'm more inclined to doing a drama in India or Europe right now, a shorter film. And we are also open to something new, you know, but it's just, we are so burnt out from this film right now that we'd rather just create a vacuum and hope for something new to inspire us.
Yeah. Yeah. Take a coffee break.
Take a game again with the coffee. Well, folks, listen, you can find Vishal Solanki and Han Nguyen's new documentary about the life of a coffee bean, Caffeinated, in select theaters, as well as on iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, Xbox, Vudu, and all major cable providers, including Time Warner, Comcast, DirecTV, and more. You guys have a website you want to mention?
Yeah, it's caffeinated.vhx.tv. Okay. That's where you can find all the information about Caffeinated.
And does the film have a Twitter and Facebook presence?
Yes.
Okay, well, we'll share all that information on MrMedia.com. And, Vishal Solanki and Han Nguyen, fascinating film. I think anyone who drinks coffee should find this of interest. It's quite an eye-opener. It's a very sweet film, too, at times, I'd like to point out. I just want to thank you both so much for joining us in Mr. Media today.
Thank you, Bob. It was a pleasure speaking with you. I'm not a very good talker.
Oh.
It's like, I can't help you there.
Just smile and look pretty then.
Hi, this is Buzz Burbank in the Buzz Burbank newsroom, preparing for you another Buzz Burbank news and comment. Do you like good stories? Boy, I sure do. I turn over a lot of stones each day to make sure I don't miss the best ones. Sure, some make me angry, and some make me sad, and some make me laugh, and isn't that what makes us human? I'm proud of the fact that I pack more news into my 10 or 15 minutes a day than the evening news does in a half hour. It's a free podcast at BuzzBurbank.com, or you can subscribe free at iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or get it on any RSS device. It's like a newspaper for your head. It's Buzz Burbank News and Comment, another Realm Network presentation. Weekday mornings right here on the Realm Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, welcome to the George and Tony Entertainment Show. Prepare for awesome mediocrity.
We're the Cousin Oliver of the Realm Network. I'm George.
And I'm Tony.
And we're a weekly family-friendly podcast about pop culture.
From our point of view.
At RealmNetwork.com. The George and Tony Entertainment Show. From the Realm Network.
This is Snake. Do you read me, Otacon?
Loud and clear, Snake.
Did you listen to the latest episode of the Gaming Marathon on the Realm Network?
Of course. They really know their stuff about gaming, especially that Usid guy.
Yeah, but that Chirac guy is a real jerk. I don't like him.
Regardless, their reviews are spot on and they tell it like it is.
That's for sure.
What happened, Snake? Were you spotted?
Nah, it's just Lil Melser crying about the O's again.
Close call.
I better continue the search for Metal Gear, but keep listening to the Gaming Marathon each week.
You got it, Snake.
New every Monday afternoon right here on the Realm Network.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Lowell. And if you're fans of Don and Mike, you may know who we are.
Our number one interns. You've met them on the show. They're the guys that ate all the junk and they were outside with each other holding hands with a sign that said that they loved each other wearing the dunce caps.
What you may not know is that we started out as fans back in their WAVA days.
Hi, Don and Mike. It's Mark and Lowell.
Oh, yeah. These are two guys that we once actually called them our proteges, didn't we?
And now we have our own show, so we want you to give it a shot. Just check us out at the Realm Network, realmnetwork.com, or you can go to markandlowell.com.
Resistance is futile. It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Every Tuesday and Thursday evenings right here on the Realm Network. And catch the Poor Premium Show Friday nights.